Now I'll need your mind tonight. I'll need more than your heart. I'll need your mind. When Jesus came, they were disappointed. The Old Testament had told of a king that was going to come and set up a kingdom. They could only think in terms of a throne, a palace, a scepter, a robe, diadem, crown, army, swords, stallions. And because of that, men did not recognize him when he came. He came as the lowly Savior. The verses we read a while ago, are you listening? The verses read a while ago had one thing in common. It said that multitudes followed him. All the verses had one thing in common. Multitudes followed him. He did not come to assert his authority. He did not come to assert or seize his right to lead. He came to present to the people a qualified leader and to earn their fellowship. I've said this so often. I do not believe in asserting one's leadership. That's one of the great problems we face in our country, our churches, our homes, every area of leadership. I'm the boss because I'm the boss. Now, I want to say that the Bible teaches that. But you're not much leader if that's what you use for leverage. Are you listening? Everybody right this way now. I've got something to tell you, and you need to hear it whether you think you do or not. Listen carefully. I said that Jesus did not come to say, the Old Testament says, I'm the king. Jesus came to live the kind of a life that would make men want to follow him. Did you know that I do not have an official position at First Baptist Church of Hammond? Nor do I want one. You know that the only power I have in this church, I'm not president of the corporation. I'm not on the board of trustees. I have no power in this church but the power of influence. That's all. That's all I want. I can't influence you to follow me. I don't want to leave. I will not be the pastor of this church but taking you to Hebrews chapter 13, verses 7 and 17 and saying, there it is right there and you follow me. I won't do that. Asserting leadership is not leadership. Asserting leadership is wanting a title and wanting power. Earning leadership is what Jesus came to do. True leadership is pushed up by fellowship, not assumed by leadership. Now follow me. They're disappointed in him. They expect him to come, the flaming, glistening sword. They expect him to come with a sharp saber. They expect him to come with an army. They expected him to come in mighty power. He came as the lowly Savior, man of Galilee. He came to be a servant. They were looking for someone to be served. He came to give. They were looking for someone to receive. He came as an humble one. They're looking for someone to be a conquering one. And they did not recognize him because he did not come in the manner they thought he would come to assume his leadership. Now, there are three kinds of leadership. Kind number one, a strength that others do not have. Now, follow me as I say this. A leader is one who has in excess what others have, so that others can draw from him without emptying him. The first kind of a leader, or the first leadership, is leadership that is caused by a strength that others do not have. Not by coming to conquer and saying, this is mine, and I'm the leader, and I've got my rights, and you do what I say. That's not leadership. That's dictatorship. The What I'm talking about is a strength that a person obtains that makes people get strength from him. And they make him their leader voluntarily because they need and they want the strength they get from this one. I'm talking about men like Charlemagne, Napoleon, Caesar, men who have unusual strength, though I do not agree with all that they've done. They're men of unusual strength. Men that could give others strength. Men that had strength in excess that others did not have, from whom others can secure strength. That's the first form of leadership. Don't forget it. A strength that others do not have. Number two. And by the way, when I get to number three, I'm not finished. I'm just starting. I don't want you to get your hopes up. I don't want you to think that I'm one-third through the sermon. I'm one-third through one-third of the sermon. Number two, not only a strength that others do not have is a form of leadership or causes one to be a leader, but number two, a truth or truth that others do not have. Plato, Shakespeare, Bacon, and others did not have the strength of a Caesar or a Charlemagne, but they had an excess of truth or truths. And from that excess, others found truths. So there are two, I've already mentioned, forms of leadership. A leadership by someone who has a strength that others do not have. Secondly, someone has truth that others do not have. Number three. There's a third form of leadership. And that form of leadership is by those who have a holiness that others do not have. George Mueller was not a Charlemagne or a Caesar or a Bacon or a Plato or a Shakespeare. George Mueller was just a little fellow that walked with God and had a life that was so holy that others gained holiness from his excess. Just as some gain strength from the overflow of the strength of some, and some gain knowledge from the overflow of the knowledge of some gain holiness from the overflow of the holiness of some. I'm talking about Andrew Murray. If you let me leave our own circles, even to go to some with which you would not agree, I'm talking about Mahatma Gandhi or even a Mother Teresa. Not advocating either of those necessarily, but there was a certain kind of a self-effacing and self-sacrifice in all of these that caused others to see in them what they recognized as an excess of holiness. And they were drawn to them. You know people, when you're with them, you're better. You know other people, when you're with them, you're stronger. You know other people, when you're with them, you're more knowledgeable. And the very fact that they have an excess of strength causes you to want to be around them to receive their strength. And if they have an excess of knowledge, you want to be around them to receive their knowledge. And if they have an excess of holiness, you want to be around them to receive from their holiness. So we have three things. We have first, the hero. Second, we have the teacher. Third, we have the saint. Now, if you are going to be a leader, you're not going to be a leader because you've been elected. We got a heap of folks elected to office that lead our country. They couldn't lead a horse to drink water if he was starving to death. I mean, we got a lot of them call themselves leaders of our country. I wish you could meet some of them. I really do. I wish you could sit on airplanes beside them and talk to them as I do in my travels across the country and tremble when you stop and realize the condition this nation's in by those who sit in the Senate chamber and lead us. I went to the White House to visit Mr. Carter one time, and I told one of the cabinet members, you fellows need to come to pastor school. Learn how to run this thing. And I'm in it. I never was so discouraged in my life. I don't want to go back. I never was so discouraged in my life to see you're not a leader because you got more votes than somebody else. Your smile may have done that. That's what got Mr. Carter in the White House. That and peanuts. I mean, your smile can get you elected. Your charisma can get you elected. Your looks can get you elected. That's what got me in here. That doesn't make you a leader. Back in World War II, we had fellows who became officers and leaders in the Army who went to OCS, Officers Candidate School. They went to OCS, came out second lieutenants. They're the most hated people in the entire Army. We had other fellows on the battlefield when somebody, the officer was killed, the second lieutenant that came out of OCS was killed, usually from the rear. Some guy, the fellows just said, take over, Joe. Joe may have been a sergeant. He may have been a corporal. He may have been a private. But they said, take over. Why? Because he had the qualities of leadership. He had a strength from which they could draw. He had an excess of strength. And he became an officer commissioned on the field. And those are the fellows that won the war for us. Why? They're leaders. Not because they passed a test in officers' candidate school. But because they're real men who in the battlefield and the heat of the battle gave strength to others, and that's what Jesus did. A great multitude followed him. He didn't say, hell, you multitude, you come on and follow me. He didn't say that. No, they saw his strength and said, we want that. They heard his truth and said, we want that. They saw his holiness and said, we want that. And great multitudes followed him, and he was pushed to leadership because there was an excess of strength and truth and holiness that attracted them to him and from which they wanted to, which they wanted to draw from him. So we have the hero. That's the one who has the strength that draws people to follow him. We have the teacher. Now, look, I want you to apply this. I want you dads to apply this to your home. I want you teachers to apply this to your classroom. I want you mamas to apply this to your children. I want you young preachers to apply this to your future life. I don't want you going to a church and say, you sit there and listen to me because I have the title of pastor of this church. No, sir. You walk with God and get so strong. And you live in this book and get so full of knowledge. And you walk a holy life to be so holy that people will say, I need the strength from his excess. I need the knowledge from his excess. And I need the holiness from his excess. So they'll follow you because they want to follow you. And that's real leadership. Power of influence. Not the power of office, but the power of influence. We draw our strength from group one. You're thinking of someone right now. Maybe it's your daddy. Maybe it's your mama. Maybe it's your boss. Maybe it's a friend. But you're thinking of someone right now. When you get around them, you feel stronger. Why? As Jesus said, he felt virtue leaving himself. What was that? I don't intend to know all of it, but I believe this. I believe that Jesus had an excess of virtue. So he could share virtue and not have any less virtue. So he could share strength and have no less strength. So he could share truth and have no less truth. And that's what leadership is. Look, the great leaders we have around here, and we have some great leaders. This man right here probably is the greatest leader of a choir in America today. We got men on this platform that are great leaders. Brother Fernandez is not here, but he is a leader. And Dr. Evans is, in every sense of the word, a leader. Now, none of these men seized the power. None of these men had a coup and took over. These men were not leaders of the institutions when they came, of the organizations when they came here. They rose to a place of leadership because they had an excess of either strength or knowledge or holiness that attracted others to drink from their fountain that never would run dry. So we draw our strength from them, our power. We draw our thoughts and our thinking from them. They provoke us to think from their knowledge. We draw our goodness from them, from their holiness. I remember the first time that I heard Dr. John Rice preach. Now, I'd heard of John Rice. I'd never seen him. I had read the articles in the Sword of the Lord. From the articles in the Sword of the Lord, I thought he was about 7'8" tall. Weighed about 400 pounds. Wore a size 60 coat. Thought he had a booming voice. And thought he must eat nails for breakfast, little children for lunch, and grandmothers for supper. I just knew that when Dr. Rice walked out, his charisma would fill the platform. I sat in the audience and waited to see this great man of God. And out walked a fellow who couldn't even look straight. Had a stomach shaped like mine, in excess of mine. Sort of like yours. But anyway. And I was waiting for him to say, "Open your Bibles to John chapter 3, and we'll check this, and you do this."
The guy, you could hardly hear him talk when he first started.
He said, "May the Lord, dear Lord, help us."
And he said, "I'm an unworthy servant." And I thought, yeah.
But you know what? I wasn't through being shocked. I was sitting out there wondering what was so hot about him and reached up and tears rolled down my cheeks. And all of a sudden my heart began to burn. And all of a sudden I realized there was some supernatural power upon that old man. And tears rolled him down my cheeks, and before this was over I was at the altar on my knees. Bang! Power. Power! John Rice wasn't what he was because he was good looking. He wasn't what he was because he was strong. He wasn't what he was because he was a commanding personality. He wasn't what he was because he assumed leadership or took over the wheel. He was what he was because the mighty power of God was on his life, and others gained strength and power from the excess of power the old man had. Remember the first time I heard him teach. I never heard anything like that in my life. He taught on Jesus, our pattern, being filled with the Holy Spirit. I guess I heard that sermon 150 times through the years. That first time I heard it, I never heard anything like that in my life. You know what I wanted to do? I wanted to do what I did. I wanted to follow him around for years and listen to him teach. Why? He led me. Dr. Rice didn't say, "Now, son, you sit still there. I got something you ought to hear. I'm your leader. You follow me around 22 years. Now, you just keep your big mouth shut." Impossible. "You keep your big mouth shut and you listen to me because I know more than you know and you follow." No, he just started teaching. I said, "Yeah." Why? Because he had earned the right for leadership that he did not necessarily want. Real leaders don't really like to lead. You know what I said? Real leaders don't really enjoy leading. You know what I said? I said real leaders don't really enjoy leading. And if you're looking forward someday to becoming a leader, you're not going to be much of a leader. Real leaders would rather follow. You check the great preachers in history, and you will find that many of them were pushed up by followers on the shoulders of followers. They did not conquer followers. Dr. George W. Truett, pastor for 40 years, First Baptist Church of Dallas, Texas. You know how he was called to preach? He was a layman in a country church. And the pastor resigned, and the people talked him into pastoring that church. He said, "I don't feel led." They said, "We feel led. You to be our pastor." He said, "If you feel led, I'll take that as being of God." And that's the way he began preaching. He didn't want to. But he had strength, excess from which they could draw. and knowledge in excess from which they could draw, and holiness in excess from which they could draw. Dale Carnegie would have been ashamed of John Rice. And by the way, there's far too much emphasis on that. How to win friends and influence people. Won't you change that to how to help friends and be a servant to people? Far too much. As sure as I say that, we've got 13 teachers of Dale Carnegie courses here. And I'm glad, because you need to hear what I'm going to say. I'm not against the Dale Carnegie course. A time or two I've suggested to people, they go take one. But I want to tell you something. That won't make you a leader. Leaders are servants. Leaders have something to serve. It may be they have power to serve, strength to serve. It may be they have truth to serve. It may be they have wholeness to serve. But leaders are servants. And Jesus said, let him that is the least of you be your leader, and the servant is the greatest of all. And the Son of Man did not come to minister to, but to minister. He came to be a servant, and in so doing, multitudes followed him. Why? Because he came to serve. Now, how can I properly lead? Follow me carefully. If there are three kinds of leadership, a strength that others do not have, a truth that others do not have, and holiness that others do not have, and an excess of strength so that others can draw from that strength without diminishing it, and an excess of truth so others can draw from that truth without exhausting it, and an excess of holiness so that others can draw from that holiness without exhausting it, then I want to know how I can get this excess of strength, how I can get this excess of truth, and how I can get this excess of holiness, not so I can be a leader, but so I can help people. And if I can help people of necessity, I'll be leading people. Burst the power. As a young preacher, I set out to find out the common denominator between great preachers of the past. And I said, I'm going to find out. I've always been a biography nut. More nut than biography, but I've always been a biography nut. I've always loved biographies. And as a young preacher, I had more time than I have now. And to be quite frank with you, I read more biographies then than I do now, though I read many now. And I read the lives of these men. These great men of the past. Men whom people followed. Men who had strength in excess so they could share with others. Men who had knowledge in excess so they could overflow on others. Men who had wholeness in excess. And I tried to decide, what is the common denominator? What do they all have that's a lack? I found that some of those fellows preached for 20 minutes. And others preached for an hour and a half. That wasn't the same. Today, you hear Dr. A.B. Henderson preach. He'll preach 18 minutes. You hear Dr. Bob Gray preach. He'll preach forever. And I'm somewhere in between, leaning a little bit toward Bob Gray. But the length of sermon was not the common denominator. What is it? Oh, I know. Education. But I found that some people, like Dwight Moody, didn't finish high school. And I found some, like R.A. Torrey, were great scholars. I found some, like Billy Sunday, ran across the pulpit, never stopped behind the pulpit, had his outline, the letters on his outline on each high, because he just ran by the pulpit and couldn't have an outline, had to have a signpost. Where I found that, where Billy Sunday did that, I found that that Jonathan Edwards read his sermons word for word and never moved. So it's not that. It's not the running. When I was a kid preacher in college, young fellow in college like you are now, I tried to find out the answer. We had a guy come to our college named L.D. Ball and preached a revival. L.D. Ball had the cutest way of doing it you ever saw in your life. You do like that. He'd say, point number one, point number two. I thought it was the cutest thing I ever saw. I said, that's it, boy. Point number three. Yeah, as many points as I got in my sermons, he'd have to have his shoes off. But anyway, so I went out of my little country church and I said, folks, point number one, point number
two. Point number three. Didn't help me a bit.
So I found out L.D. Ball must have something more than just the little doojigger while he was... Didn't do it. Joe Boyd came to town. Joe Boyd put his big old hand on the pulpit right like that and kept his foot like that way up high. And he'd come down and hit that pulpit and the whole building would shake. I said, that's it. I went out in my little country church, all 140 pounds of me. Did like that. Came down on that. Building didn't shake at all, but I shook a great deal. I found that was not the answer. Lester Roloff came to town. He sings while he preaches. I found that wasn't the answer for me either. Or for you. But I wanted to find out what was the common denominator. I went to the library of East Texas Baptist College and read everything I could find on the lives of great men. The length of sermons, nothing in common. Educational training, nothing in common. Dynamic delivery, nothing in common. Cultural background, nothing in common. But I found one thing they all had. Every one of them had a time in his life where he felt, for the first time in his life, the power of God came on him. Every one of them. Every one of them. And I said, that's got to be it. Now, these men did not say, I want folks to follow me and I want to lead people, so I'm going to get the power of God. You won't get it like that. In fact, you'll never be a leader as long as you want to be a leader. Young preachers, Miles Anderson College, say to me often, well, I want to have my own people. You'll never have them. No. But if you say, I'd like to help everybody I can help, you'll have them. Every once in a while, somebody asked me, well, how did this church get started? Back, I didn't got started. Back down 27 and a half years ago, I came to this church. It's already a strong church. But I came here 27 and a half years ago. I found somebody that needed help, and I helped them. And he went out and told somebody. So I got help down there. And he came down here and said, can you help me? And we helped him. And he had a friend. And he went back and said, there's some folks down there that'll help you. Go down there. You'll get help. And we just kept helping. Everybody showed up. Till one day, we found we had thousands of people here. Nobody ever said, I want to control a mighty army. Too many folks want to get promoted. Leadership is pushed up from the bottom. Leadership is by someone who does not want to lead, but wants to help, and wants to give, wants to strengthen, wants to teach, wants to encourage. And a lot of folks, that's why they followed Jesus. He didn't come and say, hell, I'm God, you follow me. He didn't say that. He started teaching. They said, never man spake like this man spake. And they followed him. It said of the disciples, they took note of them that they had been with Jesus. I found a rugged Billy Sunday preach with his Bible open to Isaiah 61:1, and the Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because it anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. I found that Billy Sunday came to a place in his life where he realized he had to have God's power. I found that a scholarly orator wrote a book on that very thing and told about the time in his life, not a time when he was filled, but the first time he was filled. And he told about that. And I said, there's a rugged Billy Sunday and a scholarly oratory, nothing in common but one thing, and that is they had the mighty power of God came on their lives. I found an uneducated Dwight Moody told about walking down Wall Street one day. Two little ladies in his church used to come up to him and say, Mr. Moody, we're praying you'll have something you don't have. He said, don't pray for me. Pray for sinners. I've got all I need. They said, nevertheless, we're praying. There's something you need you don't have. And Mr. Moody was walking down Wall Street. All of a sudden,
God's power came on him in such a way he had to beg God to withhold himself until he could find the bedroom of a friend to borrow and get along with God. And Mr. Moody said that then and there he was filled with the Holy Spirit. Mr. Moody didn't say, I want to be filled so I can have men to follow me and obey me.
No. Leaders don't give orders. Leaders take orders. Leaders aren't serve. Leaders serve.
Leaders don't give commands, they relay commands. I found that a George Fox told about the first time he was filled. Now, I'm not saying about a time and that's it. I'm saying about the first time, the many times. I read about Christmas Evans, John Wesley, George Whitfield, George Mueller, Charles G. Finney, Peter Cartwright. And I could tell you of those, in each case, of the time when these men, for the first time, were filled with the Holy Spirit. They weren't seeking authority. They were seeking power. You've got the power, you'll have the authority. If you don't get the power in order to have the authority. And then on the grave of my father, I learned something about that power. My constant cry now, all of my life, my constant cry is, God, give me power. I guarantee you, I've prayed that prayer 500 times today. I guarantee you. God, give me power. Give me power.
Power for what?
Power to help people.
Power for what?
Power to reach people. Not power to command people. Not power to rule people. Not power over people, but power with people, because God's power comes upon me so that you may gain strength by coming to hear me. That's all I want. That's all I want. I'm the boss here. I'm not. I'm the influencer here. That's all I want. If I can't influence you, I don't want to lead you. Quit trying to be a leader and try to get God's power. If God gives you His power, He'll give you an excess of strength so folks can gain strength from you. Listen, I can watch Dr. Robertson walk on the platform and feel stronger. I can think of Lester Olof and feel stronger. I just didn't like to watch him walk on the platform. I never was around the guy where I didn't feel stronger. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about how you felt when a storm came up and you ran to Mama and put your head in her lap. That's what I'm talking about. Mama didn't say, you get in and put your head in my lap. I'm your mama. She didn't have to. That big Texas tornado was coming over, boy. Looked like one of these little bugles and crackers things. Came over like that. Mama didn't say, son, you get in the house. No, she didn't have to. No way, Jose. I took off for the house. That's leadership. She had strength. I needed it. She had an excess of it. And I needed it. Then there's truth. You get the power of God. You get the power of God on you, and I guarantee you somebody's going to follow you. Then there's truth. The other day, Larry Weller. Larry's one of our mission men, weighs 942 pounds, give or take a few pounds. I imagine Larry weighs 350. He's a white fridge. But Larry and I, look, he's a rescue mission man. He lives at the rescue mission. We pay him a few dollars a week to drive the church van. But he's a mission man. He lives over there. Keeps wine underneath his bed. So what happens? Larry meets me at the airport. We'll get in the car. We'll start talking about sports. I'll say, Larry, what year Don Larson pitched the no-hitter in the World Series? He knows it. He can tell you every baseball player has ever had an upset stomach and what day it was on. He knows sports like no man I ever met in my life. So what happens? When Larry and I get together and talk about sports, he's the leader. He doesn't say to me, "You sit still, Larry, you're just a preacher." No, he didn't say that. He just starts talking about sports and I don't have anything to say. I thought I knew sports. But that guy is a walking encyclopedia of sports. Now, so when we talk about sports, he's the leader. Leader why? Because he knows some truth I don't know. He becomes the leader. You know, if some of you preacher boys, and I'm not preaching to preacher boys tonight, I really have parents in mind tonight. I'd like to get some of you dads to spend your time getting the power and getting the knowledge and turn the box off and read some and become educated and know some things and get some strength and get some knowledge and walk with God so your children will want to follow you. I'm not giving any child the license tonight to disobey dad. That's not all. And you're not right with God unless you obey authority, and you ought to obey authority. I sure would like to get some dads holy enough where children could draw holiness from them, and strong enough with God so children could draw strength from them, and knowledgeable enough so children could draw knowledge from them. But some of you, future Billy Sundays, forget it. Forget it. Learn. There are always people to follow folks who learned. If I'm driving down the street in a strange town and I don't know where I am and I'm trying to find some place and get directions, I may stop a paper boy and he gives me directions. He becomes my leader. Why? Because he knows something I don't know. So the more things I can learn, the more chances I've got to help people. And the more things you learn, and in God's name, quit trying to be a big boss and quit trying to be a big chief and get some power with God and learn some things and walk with God and live a holy life. And folks will want to follow you. Dr. Evans and I were talking the other day. Good night. I'm the boss. I am the chancellor, just like Hitler. That's what he was called. And these students at Alexander College are right when they say, "Heil, heil." But we start talking about history, which we never had of. Listen, I never heard anything like it in my life. He said Billy Sunday died certain date, born certain date. Well, he was born first. And we start talking about Luther. I made a few comments about Luther. Exhausted my knowledge of him in a few seconds. I was trying to impress Evan. By my soul, he came back and he started telling me stuff about Luther. It's like that. I became the president. He became the chancellor. He led. Why? Knowledge. That's why he led. Knowledge. You reckon maybe you ought to stay in the book and learn something, and maybe because you've learned so much that maybe you may have an overflow and an excess of knowledge so folks will come to hear you as you teach? My old pastor, Brother J.C. Sizemore, He had about as much charisma as a barber, as a haircut. A little bitty short fella, weighed about 120 pounds. Hardly ever raised his voice, but I'll guarantee you that man knew the Bible. I'm saying this truthfully, like no man I ever met. I saw him preach an entire 10-day revival campaign, morning services and evening services from Romans 10, 1 through 3, and never got through Romans 10, 3. Three verses. Entire revival. I mean, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Monday morning, Monday night, Tuesday morning, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, Wednesday night, Thursday morning, Thursday night, Friday morning, Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday night. No, I'm sorry, it's just Saturday night, and then Sunday, and then morning and Sunday night, and then through Wednesday night, 12 days. And, three verses. Preached all those sermons on those three verses and never preached another sermon. I never knew any Bible to the Bible like that guy did. And he'd stand up there, and he was not a great dynamic leader, and he was not a man of great impressive stature. He was just a fellow who had soaked himself in this Bible and had learned the book and lived in the book and memorized the book and stayed in the book until folks wanted to come and hear what he had to say about the book. That's the only reason he's leader. He had an excess of truth from which folks could draw without depleting or without exhausting the supply. He had no qualities of leadership. You know that's why you liked to hear Lester Olof preach. Every time you heard him preach, you felt like he had just gotten back from the throne of grace. He lived in the book. The truth is, he never outlined a sermon but one time, and I saw the outline. It was right here, right over there. He had opened his Bible. He called it preaching by faith. Well, let's look. That's what he preached. Listen, I just preached in Jacksonville, Florida, at the annual Bible conference there, the 33rd annual Bible conference, same time every year, January. I guess I preached there 15 of those 30 years, and the last three or four years, last 4 years, I think, I closed it out Thursday night, Friday morning, Friday night. But years ago, I used to preach there with Lester Olof every year. He and I preached there. We were there every year. And every year, he preached from Genesis. You know why? Because Lester Olof read through the Bible every year, and wherever he was, that day he preached from it that night. He'd just say, well, let's open where I was this afternoon. Well, let's say. And Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest. He said, not enough folks doing that. He said, too many folks go in the days of oats harvest. Says, and Leah said, God hath given me my hire. Not enough hired folks around here. He just, every year in Jacksonville, we never got out of Genesis. Because that's where he was reading every day. What am I saying? I'm saying, Lester Olof lived in the book. And he had found some things that we hadn't found, and we wanted to hang around him and find what he had found. Sometimes he found things that God hadn't found. But we were, and that's why God listened to him. I'm saying, quit trying to have power and authority and position. You walk with God and live in the book. And if you can get from God a power that other men do not have and a knowledge other men do not have, somebody's going to hang around you and say, I need some strength. I believe I can get it from you. I need some truth. I believe I can get that from you. And they're going to hang around you and see what they can get. And then I say, lastly, the holiness. Dr. Ford Porter had not one quality of leadership in the world. Dr. Ford Porter had no right to be in the greats in America as far as leadership is concerned, except the old man walked with God like few men I've ever seen in my life. You come across Ford Porter at 7 o'clock in the morning, his eyes were so red, you thought he'd been in a fight. Because why? He'd been up from 4 o'clock in the morning on his face before his God. That's what he'd done. And that's why folks wanted to get around him. They wanted to get around a man who walked with God, whose life was surrendered to God, and his holiness attracted men to him to gain holiness and sainthood, as it were, from him. Saintliness from him. John Fletcher. John Fletcher. He had not what you call leadership qualities, but John Fletcher prayed at the same place in his room until they said that the wall was stained with the breath of his prayers. What was his leadership? He was so holy that folks would want to glean from his holiness. Payson knelt at the same place to pray and stayed there so long every day and so long day by day till he had wore grooves in the floor, the wood, hardwood floor, where it kneeled. I'll tell you something, folks. A lot of these little guys in Howells Anderson College, they're just sitting around watching and working, and not trying to run for office. They're going to pass some of you good-looking guys like a jet plane passing a bicycle. Little old drink of water like Rick Martin. What's he doing building the biggest church in Philippine Islands? He hasn't got any business doing that. He hasn't got a big voice. He's no leader. Leaders aren't leaders. The kind you're talking about. Servants are leaders. Person gets enough power to have some more to serve, he's a leader. That person gets enough knowledge to have some to serve, he's a leader. Person gets enough knowledge, gets enough holiness to have some to serve, he's a leader. And so when Jesus came, they expected him to wear robes of royalty, a crown of diadems, a scepter of diamonds, to give commands and orders. But he came as the lowly stranger of Galilee, tiptoeing along the Jordan, sleeping not in the palace, but on the side of the Mount of Olives, washing feet instead of having his feet washed, ministering instead of being ministered to, and multitudes followed him. I do not know what sphere of leadership yours is tonight or what responsibilities God has given you. I guarantee you, you're never going to be a leader because you hold the title. You're never going to be a leader because you've assumed the place and the seat of responsibility. You're not going to be a leader until you seek His power so others will voluntarily follow you to gain strength. And seek truth till others voluntarily follow you to find what you've learned. And walk with God till others will voluntarily follow you.